Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I'm an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Justin Manhart joins me at TalkCast every Thursday night, starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone to style 605-562-0444. This call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to Talk's website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702 and you'll find us there. But if you want the best online experience, you can go to twitch.tv at twitch.tv/SFU on call, and you will find us there and be able to join the chat room and watch my lovely face during this whole broadcast. And if you contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on the Twitter/X/whatever it is this month, I think someone heard someone call it Twix, which was, there's also a cereal called Twix, but whatever. Moving on forward, my podcasting account is SFU on call, big surprise. And the personal account is Paul France, PAULFRANZ. There's no T in that. Also, my business account is Franz Games, FRANZGAMES. Again, there's no T in that. And of course, it's lovely TalkCast. Gets no podcast available on iTunes. Various other feeds around the net. Steve Cole was, of course, busy working on the art for the Orion Master Starship book. And also, Steve Petrick was busy working on Module K. Also, this week was released was the revised edition of the Call to Arms Starfleet Book 1.2 Zinti Ship Master Card Pack. So you can now pick that up. Sorry, I did not write down how much that costs, so we're going forward on that. Found on the online store this week is GURPS Klingon. Newly revised in 2021, GURPS Klingon is a source book for GURPS Prime Directive Empire of Steel. The Klingon Empire is the most dangerous enemy faced by the Federation, and yet the Klingons don't think the Federation are their primary threat, except economically. In this book, you will find out even more about the Empire and the people who inhabit it. More about the history of the Klingons. Find out how Kalis conquered the planet. Discovered what is known about the old kings who took the Klingons into space. Then mysteriously vanished, stranding the Klingons on their homeworld and read how the Klingons returned to the stars and became an empire to be respected and feared. More about the Klingons. Find out more about the Klingons themselves, including their biology, culture, military, government, emperors, religions, economics, legal systems, and colonized planets. Discover what options are open for education in the Klingon Empire and include in more information about Imperial paladins, military nobility, and various intelligence and police agencies. In this revision, more information has been included in the templates, including new skills. Moving on and forward onto the SFB Online Tournament, the Sapphire Star 17 tournament is still looking for players. We have only 4 slots left, so if you want to join us, please sign up immediately on the sign up page, and also for the SFB Online. Also, if you want to, there is a that'll take you. There's also another link to pay because it costs $10, and all you have to do is win one game and you get the $10 back. It's really neat in that regards. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to the library report, I have yet to update the library. I apologize for slacking on that. There are some ones that are outstanding in my inbox. Also, when it comes to FedCom library, there's still no update there. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, the one and all Paul Vikings, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have Doug. Hey, Doug.
Hey. I am here.
That's always good to see. And we have Gary. Say, Gary.
Hello.
Okay. Don't mind me, folks. I'm just getting the Twitch monitor going. Yeah, my iPad. Oops. I'm not sure if any of you guys heard an echo.
No.
Okay. Good. But anyway, the first topic of the evening, Gary, you mentioned something that there was some discussions going on when it comes to F&E, and I think SFB on the discussion board that I missed, basically.
So, first of all, the folks at Battle Group Toronto have posted a news item. Basically, there's going to be an in-person tournament for SFB coming up next month.
Oh, yes.
So,
yes.
I don't know if you've already covered it in the news portion, but might be worth just
totally forgot
a bit for anyone who's listening, who's either up here or who can cross the border relatively conveniently, who might want right to attend.
Yeah, possibly. I'm not sure how far Schenectady is from where they're going to be playing. But I know they're like northern New York, near Albany. So, anyhow, okay. So there's a tournament going on in Canada. You said it was the Toronto. Gary, are you
Toronto,
there?
Ontario, that's correct.
Ontario, okay.
Sorry, I'm just looking for the announcement on the video.
Yeah, I think. Excuse me. I could have sworn I saw something like on Facebook.
Yeah, if you're on the BBS, go to Company Convention Stores Ideas.
Oh, okay.
And then Convention News Multi Games. And then Convention Announcements is the most recent post.
Okay. Convention News. Commence announcements. Okay. There it is. The Battle Group Toronto is proud to announce the 5th SFB Toronto Championship. So it's going to be in Toronto, Ontario. It is Royal Canadian Legion Branch 10. The address is 1083 Pape Avenue in Toronto, Ontario. It's going to be run on July 19th, 20th, and 21st from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Entry fee is $20 for a single fee or $30 for the full tournament. And okay. Dudes, you should have told us. You mentioned. Okay. Yeah, I don't. Okay. The tournament format will be determined based on attendance. So if there's a lot, then I'm assuming they're going to go with a patrol style. And if it's not that many, they'll have a single elimination, which if that's the case, and you like bought the full ticket, then I'm assuming you could come back and play against the losers. Just to have fun, you know, and play some more SFB. Because if you're going there for the tournament, that's why you're there, you know. And just to mention the previous winners, we have Costa.
Well, it says that.
Yes.
Sorry, it just says near the bottom that they're going to have an SFB group scenario set up as well.
Right. Please, not about the playoffs, can you participate in the SFB group scenario? Please join us and forward questions to Sebastian's Pelosi. Yeah, his call sign is King Zilla. I think he's King Zilla on the SFB online. And for those of you who've played in tournaments, looks like 2019 was won by Tim Linden. He's very well known, at least to me, as a Canadian, because he's come down to the Origins Gold Hat tournament that we've had, you know, in the past that hasn't been run for a long time now. And of course,
what, over 20 years?
Jeez, it might be that long. Jeez, I don't remember.
That time frame.
Yeah. Agreed.
Probably more like 15 or so. But
yeah, I was still living in Sinking Spring at that point. Mm-hmm. So it could have been 15, maybe more.
Well, that was like the main reason I stopped going to Origins.
Yeah, understood.
They stopped it, so it's like, mm-hmm. You know, what's the point?
Well, what's the point for me to go out there, you know?
Yeah, that was the big point for me.
Mm-hmm.
All that tournament play all weekend.
Yeah, there's something, even I had a passport, which I don't. I still have to get a pair of passports. I did have a passport around, let's see, it would have been like 92. So it's been like 33 years. I actually had a passport. Then it expired. And I never renewed it. So I need to go through the whole process all over again. But anyway, even if I had a passport, I couldn't go to this thing.
Start now, baby. You'll be right back.
What's that?
If you start now, you might be ready in time.
True, but the problem is I'm going to be going to Indianapolis that exact weekend. For some reasons I do not know, that weekend seems to be very popular. Because that was also the same weekend there was supposed to be the big bash. You know, the big SFB bash, I think in Schenectady. Run by Dave. Chang. Yeah, David Chang. And that got canceled because they didn't have enough people involved. I really wanted to go to that one, but I got scheduled for this other one before they announced the date. Anyhow, what were we going to say, Gary?
The trophy, I guess I was going to say that the trophy is, there used to be a member of Altitude Toronto, Art Trotman. He passed away a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Or, I forget the exact year. But he's still remembered, and he's honored with the trophy. So.
Cool. What was the thing when it comes to FNE on the discussion board that was going on that I missed, basically?
All right, so there's an SFB bit of news. Not news, but interesting stuff. So Mike West has been, there's a thread for module C4R. It's basically, it's to give more, like to make the simulator empires, like the FRAX and stuff, campaign compatible. So he's actually been posting in one of the C4R discussion threads about a whole bunch of SFBs that he's been drawing up lately, and including like various things like a heavy war destroyer and PF for the FRAX. Apparently he's done one as a submarine PF as well as a surface PF. And he's like discussing about some of the different mission variants that he's done or others that he decided not to do because he figured that the FRAX wouldn't have them, or that the Klingons wouldn't bother creating them for them.
Mm-hmm.
But his goal seems to be to create a whole bunch of SSDs for each of the Alpha simulator empires, and then have them available as like SSD packs for people to be able to purchase if they so wish. That's what it seems to be. So if anyone wants to have a quick look at the C4R thread, you can see some of the information that he's posted about some of the designs that he's gone for and some that he has. But I guess it might be a while before we actually get to see them for ourselves. But nonetheless, it's interesting to see that these kind of things are in development.
Mm-hmm. I think I found it.
So if you go under, have you found it?
Let me look at it.
Yeah, it's yeah. The thread that,
yeah, yeah, it just started up again.
Titles, module, C4R. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was quiet until, around April? Yeah, it was quiet in like December and then came back alive in April. Looks like Mike West started. Okay. Mike West says, believe it or not, I've been slowly working on this. I've been trying to finish off what I'm going to do with the fracs. And I have three groups of ships done or going to do, not going to do, and decided don't exist. Ah, cool. Steve Cole was mentioning that today Gene greenlighted the idea of future series of 3 or 4 modules, possibly C4R 1, 2, and 3, and C4K, which might be totally reorganized before they see print. There are, of course, C4Y-123 and C4X-123, which will be considered as well. The current idea is Mike West to run with the ball, and sometime this summer we will see where we got and what the past looked like. Cool. And yeah, what was it? I think Mike was focusing mainly on the fracs. Yeah.
Well, for now, because I think the plan is to go through each of the simulator empires in turn. But apparently he's actually done a bunch of PFs for all of them. So he's done like barbarian PFs and other PFs and stuff. And so I guess basically when the time comes, then if there's a particular simulator empire or empires that anyone happens to be interested in, then this material will be available for them. But for me, though, I guess the most interesting thing could... You might recall that there was like a Skype project that went up maybe about a year or so ago, or I forget the exact time. And it was basically what the fracs looked like with different empires' weapons. And so, for example, there was one that had Sartorian weapons and one that had Hydran weapons and so on. So I would personally be curious to see what Omega fracs would look like. And technically, with the Barbarians, you wouldn't need to do too many new SSDs, like maybe one for the gunboats, because the technology works different than an Alpha. But many of the pre-existing SSDs, you could basically just provide a database, like a spreadsheet, and just say that if you're being this empire, you put these weapons in, or these power systems, you know, in, and so on and so on. I guess for the fracs, you could do something similar. You could basically, there's too many Omega empires to choose just one. But what you could do is do a similar thing where you basically take the SSD and pretend that the current weapon mounts are actually optional weapon mounts and that you're just setting the ones that you need. So, but I think the big thing would be interesting is for the frac submarines, you could replace the cloaking device with a pulse field from the buzzing marauders. So that would make them function differently than Alpha, but also it would be more appropriate for a simulator combat in Omega, like to help train cadets to how to deal with the cell field when they face it in you know, Wendell doesn't show up to the Raven.
Yeah, understood. Yeah, the I know there was a term, brothers of something, when it comes to taking basically Plans a ship. Frax. Was that?
Friends of the Frax.
Oh, okay. This is, okay, this is a different name. Friends of the Frax. Where the idea is to take the Frax, but exchange the Frax weapons with whatever that empire has, correct?
Yeah, so for example, there's the Plasma Frax, which is the Prax. And then I think the Hydrogen one is called the Helix, and so on and so on. So in theory, you could do something similar where you have, say, For example, if you had a Trobran Frax, you just call them the Trobrax, or, you know, still a lazy naming convention, but no more lazy than the ones that they're using for the Alpha Empire. But I think one of them was, if you do a Frax ship armed with quantum wave torpedoes, you can call them the Plex.
This thing, which you mentioned, about the historical Frax, they should be... Should their subs be Empire's power only until Y-160? At least that's what you're suggesting. I.e., trying to... It looks like you're trying... complete, you know, the whole idea of Frax being historical and starting earlier on with only certain capabilities because they're early years and that kind of thing that usually happens with early years versions of different empires' ships.
Yeah, because the Frax shouldn't have submarines with cloaking devices earlier than the Romulans have real ships with cloaking devices.
Right.
But the handy thing about the early walk Romulans that you get in Module R4J is that you could do a series of middle-year submarines that work using the same principles as the Shadow of the Eagle Romulan ships. So in those alternate timelines, then yes, you could have pre-Treaty of Smyrna submarines that have some sort of cloak or field device, whatever. But in the historical timeline, it should be more circumspect. Like, for example, you can maybe get the submarine stealth coating, but no cloak or veil or anything like that until a certain year. So I guess you could say that it would basically represent like a shallow diving submarine. Like, the submarine can't dive into deep waters. That would only happen when you have the cloak or veil, whatever, to represent that, you know, going further into the depth, so to speak.
Sorry, I was adjusting the volume level for Doug so he can hear you better. So let me just understand that. Okay, we have Friends of the Frax, the idea being to bring Frax to other empires.
You just kind of popped out. Not hearing you at all there, Paul.
Okay.
Lost your audio.
Crap. Can you hear me, Gary?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay. This just not Doug. Okay, let's try. Let's look at this for a moment. Do-do-do. Okay, I'm going to try this. I'll be right back, Doug. I'm easing out Discord. I'm coming back, so. Oh, really? So when do the updates stop for Discord? Can you hear me now?
What?
No.
Because
okay, you can hear me. He can't hear me. I don't see. Was that Gary?
Can you hear me, Doug?
Oh, I can hear you fine.
Talking, Doug, if you can hear me.
I just Discord currently is not saying that I'm doing anything. Maybe it's just I did something stupid that, and when it comes to the voice that
cut back out. It chopped a little bit and then cut out.
Okay, how about now?
I can hear you now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I think... okay. Whatever. Whatever.
It got choppy and then you just completely cut out.
Yeah, well, I turned up the input sensitivity, which I thought would be better. Obviously, no. It's worse. So that means when you crank it up, the sensitivity goes down. Meaning, I think I have to be louder to just to have it so it activates, records whatever. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was the opposite. I'm going to turn up the sensitivity so that I don't have to be as loud. And they'll pick it up. But obviously that's not the case. Okay. Because I know, Doug, you usually say that it's hard to hear Gary.
Oh, yeah. Gary is so soft. And I don't mean that in a weird kind of way. I know.
The
voice pickup is so, it's so soft. It's and low.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's I really just... have to like focus on hearing him.
Understood.
But you come through just fine.
Mm-hmm.
I turn it up so that I don't have to focus as much on him. It's like then you're blasting my ears.
I don't want that. Okay. Just gonna see this for giggles. If. Bum bum. I was just wondering if I can turn up the settings. No. Okay, let's see if I can. Here. And sound. And come on. Discord setup. Okay. Turn up a bit. Turn it up a bit. Turn it up a bit. Jeez. Hello. Okay. Say something, Gary.
Something, Gary.
Is that better, Dougo?
Yeah, it's better.
Okay. Yeah, am I louder too?
You're They're still a little loud, but I'm okay with it.
Okay. I'm going to turn it down just here. Okay. 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 Sorry. I wanted to try to resolve that real quick. It took longer than expected. Sorry. There it is. Okay. Do-do. And Gary said there was another thread that was interesting.
Yes. So I'd mentioned a few weeks ago that the Steve Cole and the F&E team are working on revised counter sheets, where fighter ups, combined ups, and strategic ups. That's Volcan with a K, Kilo, and Sierra. Sierra is an S-I-E-R-R-A, not an American way of saying, well, in Ireland we take Kilo. But the counter sheets are actually getting close to finalization. There's still the part where they want to make sure that the factors are what they should be and that there aren't any funny name discrepancies or whatever. But there's a few interesting things there. So
okay. It looks like
one thing that you might find interesting is
okay. Let me see if I can understand what you're talking about. And that is this the F&E 1-inch counters and fleet charts or something else?
So, when counters were originally printed, because each counter represents a ship or a base or a freight or whatever, auxiliary, anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
The original counter sheets, I think they had, I want to say it was around 216 counters that they could fit onto the actual cardboard. So, that meant that you had to be careful, more careful in terms of, how many of which counters you give and how many sheets do you print and include in each pack.
Mm-hmm.
So with the current generation of counter sheets, it's something like 280 or something like that per sheet, because they found a way to optimize the amount of sheet space that can still print properly. So some of the other sheets that exist whenever they run out of stock, before printing a new batch, they convert them over to the new standard. So that's basically what's been happening for three of the old counter sheets. They're now being retired and, sold out over, and replaced with these new ones. And the new ones mean that they're able to include thousands more ships or other units or other things that can be people can make use of.
Okay. So, where is... You said there was a discussion about all this?
Yeah, so for the last couple of weeks, people have been able to post requests for the ships that they want, and also the mission bearings and so on.
Yeah, yeah.
And one thing that was interesting is... in fighter operations, there is a scenario of the Four Powers War. And there's a bunch of ships that either pre-refit ships or ships that don't exist in later time periods that are historically available in that conflict. So it used to be that you would get fighter operations, the rule book, and the rules would give you the scenario for the Four Powers War. But it would have to give you a list of alternative counters, because it didn't have the counters to represent things like the Klingon C6 or the Hydrant Templar Dreadnought. But in 2016, the last time, because there's multiple counter sheets in each product. So one of the counter sheets that was in fighter ups ran out of stock and was replaced back then. And at the time, they used the spare counter sheet space to add dedicated McGeeger's counters. So now, if you want to play the Four Powers War scenario, you have proper counters for those particular ships in order to be able to play the scenario the way it was meant to be played. So what's happening now is in Strategic Ops, the new countersheet Sierra, is they basically, there was a bunch of white countersheet space that hadn't really been picked for anything just yet. And so recently it was basically decided that a whole bunch of, a number of the counters are going to be used to represent Middle Ears Gorn ships. So there's a couple of reasons why that's interesting. But if you go to the Sierra 2024 thread, you can scroll down and Steve Cole just recently posted the front of that countersheet, because basically each F&E countership, that countersheet, the front pack, the front half of it represents the unit or ship or whatever at its full capacity. And then you have to, you can turn the counter over, and there's the back of it shows the crippled the factor. So for example, like a Federation heavy cruiser is uncrippled, it has 8 points, but it's only 4 points if it's crippled. So basically each of the threads, what they've been doing is finalizing the front of each sheet and tidying things up. And then Steve Cole posts the back of the same sheet. And then you can go through the letter number grid just to make sure that everything matches up the way it should, and also that the factors are correct.
Right.
But if you go to the thread for Sierra, you can actually see a bunch of the Middle Ears Gorn ships, which many of which basically, this will be the first time that they'll actually have official F&E attack and defense factors. So that means that if you're trying to create a scenario to use those Gorn counters, then now you've got a more solid building block with which to do so.
Yeah, and I saw that he mentioned that don't report something that's wrong unless you first check the SIT first. Okay, here's the front. You're talking about sheet kilo, right? For combined operations?
Well, kilo is important too, but the ones with the Gorn, those new Middle Ears Gorn counters is Sierra. Mm-hmm. For strategic operations.
Okay. Okay. I missed it. Okay. I see it. And that is the front. Okay. So he has not shown the back of Sierra yet.
Yeah, that'll probably happen over the next couple of days, or maybe early next week.
Yeah, this part sucks. And that is to get it so the counter sheets match up. Because front and back, sometimes they're a little bit off. I've seen that. And even cutting over single-sided sheet, you have the same issue where it's the cutter isn't perfect. And you get like chopped off letters or chopped off parts of his ship or something along those lines. Don't mind me, there's a key.
Well, there are actually some times when counters get, even in SFE, they might be a reason to print something on the back of each counter. Because I think there was one time when there was an SFB, I remember, I think some sort of Romulan ships or something. And
oh,
so
well, I can
like,
see
the counter sheet one they were doing.
Well, if you're doing counters for the Romulan Civil War, I think that would be perfect. No.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
Basically, the one colors on the one
the
side,
the counters.
And you flip it, and it has the same counter, but different colors for the Civil War.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, I forget the colors of the Civil War. What was that?
I want to say it was Modular 4GA, because I think it was like each of the new ships that was made available in R4GA. I think what they did is that they put the regular random in color on the front, and then the rebel or alternate faction random on the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that using part of one of the FNE sheets to do that.
Yeah, so, as it happens, there actually is a dedicated FNE sheet for Civil Wars, because Civil Wars is meant to be the next new product. Mm-hmm. The rule book hasn't been finished yet, but the character sheets are already ready to go. You can buy them now as spare parts. And that character sheet includes things like Rebel Romulans and Rebel Lyrans, and also the Wind Cluster, because the Winds actually have two iterations of that character sheet. So some of them are on in tactical operations. They're mainly the Wind ships that stay in the cluster. But then the Civil Wars character sheet, it actually comes with the fish ships. So, but the idea would be that when the Civil Wars rulebook is ready to go, one of the scenarios you should be able to play in it is the War of Return. So, for that campaign, you would the camp sheet would provide you the fish ships you'd need to fight out.
Right. Okay, so the FNE's Civil War, we're still waiting for that? Would not surprise
Well, them. I think in FNE terms, I think a lot of the kind of development, because, you know, things have been a bit slow at ADB lately, you know, various real-life issues coming in. But also, when something happens, because they don't necessarily always have the luxury of planning ahead of time in terms of when a chemistry sheet runs out. Like, this project that's happening now, it should have already been done. But then, so it's partially to do with the sheets themselves running out whenever they run out and needing to be replaced. And the other part is how ready ADB and the staff are to actually implement the process. So, but it's happening now, and hopefully it means that in the not-too-distant future, they'll be able to move on to Civil Wars.
Understood. Yeah, it's, you know, advanced operations, minor empires, planetary operations, strategic operations, and tactical operations. As the expansion,
but, the real reason why I find the Gorn mid-tier ships interesting. So, in theory, you can use them now because there's the scenario that's in there's a scenario that's in tactical operations. I think it's basically the war that almost was. So it's like when first contact happened with the Federation. You can basically have the Fed and Gorn fleets from that time period fight the war that they didn't fight historically, but they almost fought.
Hmm.
So you can do that if you want to.
Huh. But, that sounds like something interesting.
The problem is that because...
Continue.
Yeah. But part of the problem is that in the historical timeline, the Romulans, of course, only have sublight ships before the Treaty of Smarva. So there's no real accounting for those in Federation Empire terms, so you can't really have the Gorns do anything else in the standard timeline until you get closer to the general war. So, but, as you know, there are alternate timelines out there, and one option is to dig into the Shadow of the Eagle material in that Modular 4J and then figure out a way to represent like an early warp Romulan Empire and have them fight these Gorns. So maybe there's a couple of the SSDs that are in R4J that don't have FNE counters yet. In theory, they could be added in the future so that you could create a Romulan order of battle that would be able to fight the Mid-Eaters Gorn fleet on a more even, on an almost even keel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something. To me, it's a. I'm not sure how that worked, and obviously, from a tactics perspective, it's kind of challenging. Which is early years when it comes to the Romulans before it was the Treaty of Smyrna. Did I get that right?
The Treaty of Smarta. The thing is that. I think sublight ships and the FME, they'd probably only be able to move like three hexes.
Right.
And they'd be terrible. They'd not be very good in combat. So basically, the main reason why the Gorn didn't curb stomp them is because they were so guilty about what happened to the Paravians that they were afraid that if they quarantined the Romulans, then some other space monster would show up and destroy them, and then it would be the Gorn's fault again. So, or at least the Gorns would think it that way. So, but speaking of the Paravians, there is, of course, Module C6. And if you have a look at Captain's Log 48, very conveniently, it actually has a preview Fed and Empire material for the Paravians. Mm-hmm. And there's even on the BBS, there's actually a playtest ship information table, or SIT, that gives you the basically what would be on the counters for both Middle Years and General War era Paravians. So you can actually look that up right now, and you can see how they scale up compared how they line up compared to these new Gorn counters that were on the verge of getting. So it would actually be a lot easier to do like a Middle Years border conflict between the Paravians and Gorns based on Map GP than it would to try to reverse engineer the early war problems from Shadow of the Eagle, because while we don't have the counters for the Paravians, we have all the other material that we need, more or less, to be able to have these two empires go at it.
Well, okay. The one thing that was confusing to me and still not exactly sure, and that is, I think the only reason that the Romulans could actually survive a battle when it comes to being basically using life war, non-warp, you know, in a tactical sense. I know they had warp when it comes to a strategic sense, so they can move from point A to point B quite fast. But when it comes to combat, they have sublight versus warp when it comes to Romulans versus the Gorns. And the only reason I can see that the Gorns wouldn't just wipe them with that is that the Romulans, for most part, were fighting from a defensive position, or at least never in open space, because otherwise the Gorns can just run circles around them.
Well, yeah, that was a big point in a lot of the scenarios covering some of their earlier stuff, especially in the
historical timeline. What the Romulans would do is basically, you know how they developed the, before they developed the cloaking device, they developed the masking device and the veiling device in the early years.
Right.
So they gradually built their way up to the cloak. So, and also they developed seeking plasma before the Gorns did. So they had the plasma or torpedo, but the ship to launch the plasma torpedo was still only sublight. Now, in Starfleet Universe terms, if your ship has an impulse engine, it basically has a quote-unquote non-tactical warp drive.
Right.
So the impulse engine lets you cruise at about nine parsecs a day, which translates to about 3 hexes a turn in F&E terms, because each F&E turn takes about 6 months.
Right.
But you do have to slow down to speed 1 in order to fight. So what the Romulans would do is they would, each time they go into war with the Gorns, after the Gorns develop warp and the Romulans didn't, they would sneak up to a border colony or planet under cloak or mask or veil or whatever it is. They would land their ships on the target planet, and they would point their plasma launchers upwards and dare the Gorns to take the planet back. So they knew full well, they knew that they were hopeless to be able to fight them in open space. So what they did is basically try to turn it into siege warfare on each captured colony.
Hmm.
The problem always is that because the Gorns' warp technology did keep evolving, so eventually once the Gorns got modern, like middle-year starship technology, the Romulans had no hope. And it actually does specify that if the Gorns had fought with no hands to tie their back, if they basically went all out, nothing would have stopped them from conquering the Romulans, or rather quarantining them. They would have been able to wipe their fleet from space.
Right.
And nothing under their plans. But because they had done that to the Paravians, and then when the Paravian homestead was destroyed by a Sunstake, they felt that they were to blame for what happened to the Paravians. So they thought to themselves that if they did the same thing to the Romulans, then must have stopped some other creature from doing that as well. And then that would be a second species that would be there, that would be their fault. So basically, had it not been for what happened to the Paravians, then the Gorns probably would have gotten rid of the Romulans. But then in the broader timeline, would that have been better or worse? Because say what you like about the Romulans, they do keep the other empires they're bordering with on their toes. Mm-hmm. And it basically also means that, for example, like when the Andromedans show up, then each of the individual empires is more ready to fight somebody. Because,
right.
Like, say the Gorns had defeated the Romulans, then the IFC make contact. If the contact is peaceful, then the IFC and Gorns develop friendly relations. And then you've got an entire half of the Alpha Octave where no one fights each other. From the Federation border to the Gorn border, the occupied Romulan space, which would be basically Gorn space, to the IFC. That would be three empires that don't fight. And so, you know, from an in-universe perspective, that would be great. But by the time the Andromedan War takes off, all three empires might be vulnerable in terms of having to mobilize to fight these extragalactic invaders. So from a strategic or from a game perspective, it might be trickier in the long run to have had the Gorns win than it was for the Gorns to have that guilt that basically stopped them from doing what they probably, you know, in retrospect, they probably wish they could have done it, because once the Romulans did get warped, they were once again more powerful than the Gorns. So The Gorns certainly needed the Federation to help counterbalance the threat from the Romulans. So.
Understood. Yeah, the to me, it sounds like the whole philosophy of the shadows in Babylon 5, which is war is good. It kills weaker races and lets the stronger ones become stronger. You know, that kind of idea. Man. Sorry, I've been watching Babylon 5 a lot lately.
Oh, sorry.
I'm in, what's it, season 3? I forget what the episode. But the war lines and the shadow and the first ones have decided to leave the galaxy and basically end this stupid war. That the younger races are now ready to take over, and which kind of reminds me of Lord of the Rings and that kind of thing. You know? You know, elves leave Middle Earth. What was that, Gary?
So, yeah, I was just going to say, my brain's gone. Yeah, so I did actually, there's another thread. I think there's a link to it in that Captain Sierra thread. Where it's basically that the other thread I'm talking about is the discussion thread for the Lost Empires concept of Paravians and Carnivals. And I was just posting a few thoughts about what the Middle Years wars between the two, like the tactic, the counter level at least, what things would look like if you did try to set up a border war scenario between the two of them.
Okay, the Lost Empires. Okay, I think I found the link.
actually, if it helps, it might be an idea to have two separate tabs up. One tab for the Counter Suite Sierra page, so you can keep tabs of the core encounters. And another would be to bring up the Lost Empires discussion so that you can... there's a link in that discussion for the Paravian SIT, so you can see the factors for yourself to be able to compare them one to the other.
There's the sit for the Paravians. Don't mind me, my glasses are not doing great. A little bit. Okay. Yeah, Sarah only shows certain Gorn chips. Actually, I'm looking at the Robins. Gorns are the red. There it is. Okay.
Gorns, white background, red. Factors,
red text.
Red,
text. Yeah. Okay. And Previans. Okay, where's my? There it is. My cruiser, and it's factor 6-3 versus, I think it was 6-6 for the. I was the light cruiser. Right. 6-8 versus 6-3. That's weird.
So what that is when you see, okay, in Fedon Empire, many ships, basically what they have an attack factor and a defense factor.
Mm-hmm.
If the attack and defense factor is the same, you just see one number on each side of the counter.
Right.
But if the attack factor and the defense factor are not the same, you'll see a dash between them. So the Gorn light cruiser, the unrefitted one, the CL-, the one that represents the middle years cruiser, its attack factor is 6, but its defense factor is 8.
Okay. So I'm reading that right.
So it, when you see, eventually when they print the other, they show the other side of the counter sheet. Those factors would become, on the crippled side of the ship, would become 3 offensive and 4 defensive. So you would read it as 6-8/3-4.
Okay.
So. Okay. One thing you might notice is if you're looking at the smaller ships, like frigates and destroyers, because the Gorn frigate is really the police ship. Actually, in later times, it becomes the police ship. But yeah, it's the smaller Gorn ships that they have. It's not really meant to be like a line ship, but in the early years, that's what they use it for. It basically has an uncrippled factor of 4.
Right.
So it's not that strong. The Paravian frigate is meant to be a proper frigate, and its factors are 5.
Right.
Uncrippled, I should say. So the Paravian frigate is a bit better than the Gorn frigate in both attack and defense. The Gorn destroyer, the unrefitted version, the offensive factor is lowered by 1 compared to its general war version, so it's 4-5. And the Paravian destroyer is also five. So the Fraser destroyer is actually, in F&E terms, they say it's got the same combat potential as the frigate. So the main difference, though, is that I think the command rating is better for the destroyer. So for those smaller ships, Fraser's got the advantage.
Yeah, I can see that.
But for bigger ships, it's a different story. So the Gorn heavy cruiser, its attack factor is 8 and its defense factor is 10. But the Paravian heavy cruiser, it's basically got an attack and defense factor of 8. So it just has 8 on the SIT entry. So the way F&E sees it is that they can attack the same, but the Gorn ship is tougher. And it gets a little bit weirder for the command cruiser, because Gorn command ships generally have the same firepower as non-command ships. The main difference is that they just put the flag bridge in.
Right.
So the Gorn command cruiser is 8-10 uncrippled as well. The Paravian command cruiser is more powerful than the Paravian heavy cruiser. And it, for example, it has 5 quantum wave torpedoes instead of 4. So it actually does have a combat factor of 9. So funnily enough, it actually kind of sits in the middle between the two factors that the Gorn command cruiser has. So it's more offensively capable than the Gorn unrefitted command cruiser, but it's not as defendable. But the balance kind of works itself out in theory.
What's DIP? DIP. Organize that designation.
Now, it should be noted that F&E kind of over-eggs the strength, the defensive strength of the Gorn ships. Now, it's decades too late to fix this. It actually says this in the discussion thread. But in FFE terms, the Gorn cruisers are not sturdy, that much sturdier than the Paravians, that would warrant that much of a difference. It's just that kind of the decision that was made for the Gorn ships back when F&E was first created, and they can't really get away from that now. So that is basically how it is now, I guess.
That's a good question, Paul. What is the DIP?
Yeah. Gary, do you know what the DIP ship is? Because I see the calendar, but it has no values.
Oh, that represents a diplomat. There's rules for diplomacy. So, for example, like...
Gotcha.
Usually, if you're a belligerent in a general war, you have to have a diplomat in the capitals of each of your allied empires. And also, say, for example, if you're playing the Four Powers War scenario, because the Treaty of Smarba happens around the same time, if you're the Klingon player, you actually have to send a diplomat to Romulus, and the diplomat has to actually be there to oversee the treaty and enable the transfer of Kestrel ships to the Romulans. So there's like these kind of specific rules that they have to represent that kind of diplomacy.
Okay, that explains that, because there's like each race, sorry, Empire, Sargene, has DIPs.
That's effectively about
the same. Klingons have an advantage because they have their diplomatic cruisers. They're generally better. They have their own specific rules in terms of being able to transfer diplomats from one place to another.
Mm-hmm. Well, there it is. D7N. Which is the diplomatic cruiser. Which always was interesting because On the diplomatic cruiser, there are only Klingons. None of the subject races are on those ships.
Well, if they do have any on board, they've been dirty vetted to make sure that they won't mutiny. So
right.
It's basically just they're on their best behavior, so to speak.
Yeah, I forget if the D7Ns have any security stations whatsoever. I know they cannot mutiny. That I know.
Well, they still have the security stations, but the Klingons just would still want to watch things just to make sure. But basically, they do have the no mutiny rules.
Can't get them to give up that agony booth, can you?
Yeah.
I guess to each of the empires their own.
That was bad, Doug.
So the final thing I wanted to compare is in tactical operations, they actually already printed a counter for the Gorn early dreadnought. And that ship follows the same kind of principle where it's got the same defensive factor as the general war dreadnought, but mm-hmm. it's got 2 points lower in terms of its offensive output. This is to represent, like, you know how in survey battles you don't get the plasma S torpedoes, it's all Y-17. That's mm-hmm. And also, like, the Gorns have the extra plasma and phasers and so on. So the Paravians don't have an early dreadnought as a line ship, but they do have the Raid Mothership. So they actually get it a few decades earlier compared to other mid-years empires. But on the other hand, what they don't get are any battle pods until Y-150. So there's embedded empire terms. There are specific rules that they have. If you have a tug or a light tactical transport, and you want to give it a mission in a given turn. So say if the mission is to be a battle tug, the mission is to be a repair tug, the mission is to help build a mobile base, that sort of thing. What happens is there are on the SITs for each empire, there's actually a list of certain pod variants, like battle pod, carrier pod, and so on,
right.
That you can basically you place the counter with the transport that you've got it attached to, and it adjusts the value of that counter in some way. So, for example, if you have a commando counter, then it basically adds a commando factor to the tug. And if you usually, like, if you have a battle tug, what happens is while the battle pod is attached, it increases the tug's combat factors,
mm-hmm.
and usually by two. And it also increases the command rating. But the thing is that if a tug gets crippled, it can't actually use its pod. Like, the pod is still there, but it's deactivated. So for example, if you have a Paravian raid mothership, it's able to take three pods at a time. Only two of them can be battle pods, but that's still not nothing. So if you look on the SIT for the Paravians, you'll see the offensive factor for the Paravian. It's called the DNR. That's what they call the raid mothership. You can see how, like, it's a combat factors are. The defensive factor is the same, but the offensive factor is much lower than the standard Paravian dreadnought. That's because the Raid Mothership, removes so many weapons to stuff the ship with cargo bays, repair centers, and so on. So, but once Y-150 comes along, the Paravian player, in the FNE anyway, could basically buy two combat pods, battle pods rather,
mm-hmm.
and attach them to the Raid Mothership, and suddenly the factors go up by four each, but only when it's uncrippled, because the tug pods, they give you zero additional combat power if the tug is crippled. So,
right.
On the one hand, two battle pods combined with the Raid mothership makes it fairly equal to a Gorn early dreadnought in terms of its combat capability.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets much worse if it's crippled, because the Gorn ship still has the intrinsic weapons on the base hull. It's still a warship.
Right.
Whereas the Raid mothership is a giant tug. So it's not that. You basically have to be much more careful if you're the Praetorian player to withdraw the ship.
Right.
So it doesn't get followed up on and destroyed before you can repair it.
Right, because if it has battle tug pods,
those are the kind of challenges.
Then those are deactivated if it's crippled. So you should just run for it.
Yeah, so you have to be very careful in terms of what it is you're actually going to do with those Raid motherships once the Gorn develop their first early dreadnoughts. So, but before the dreadnoughts show up, then you're probably going to see both fleets. The most powerful ships they'll have would be command cruisers, and it's more likely the Paravians would use their Raid mothership for logistical purposes, like helping with bases or helping to maybe transfer troops or to, you know, move supplies around and so on. But you know, it's up to the Paravian player in FNE terms. The handy thing about FNE is that it's up to you basically to decide what mission you want to give that ship, and you'll find out one way or the other if it's the best one, because, you know, no plans left from the beginning.
Yeah. Okay, well, with that, I think we need to wrap it up, because it's starting to get a little late, and I have to get some sleep. But anyway.
Okay.
Yep. Gary, it was a pleasure having you around. You have a good night.
Thank you. Same to you.
Doug!
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is one of those days.
Yes, it is. Is there anything that you wish to remind people of?
Yeah, Gamers of Summer, Labor Day weekend coming up.
Yes, it is.
I'm not sure if we're going to be there for the winter.
Hmm.
There was an article in Penn Live that some company is looking at using that space for a new purpose. So I emailed the my contact there to see if that would be affecting us for Labor Day weekend or not. And I'll find out. But basically, some organization is looking at turning the hotel itself into a huge rehab center of some kind. And it's like, I heard about that the other week, and then I saw an article about it, like, today. A little concerning.
Yes.
But on the other hand, I haven't had an email from the venue saying, yeah, we're closed, or anything like that. If I don't hear from the guy tomorrow, I'll just call the venue and see if they're actually still open and stuff. See what's up with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I will be looking into that.
Yes, please.
But barring that deal going through and interfering with it, we should be okay for Labor Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I'm not sure. I'm also not sure if that's going to be a thing where if they're shutting down the hotel, and that was just like somebody that expressed interest in the property.
Right.
I have no idea. So I'm going to try and talk to them this week.
Hmm. Understood.
But yeah, supposedly we'll be having Gamers of Winter or Summer, hopefully. Yay.
Yes.
I feel like we're the con of death. Some of these places, but I don't know.
I don't know
was basically it for me. Want to stop by.
Oh, definitely not this weekend. I'm camping.
Oh, yeah, gotcha. And I'll be like trying to work on storage stuff, blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay,
yeah,
have a Thank good night.
Paul. You too.
So, got to discuss the Paravians and Nephany and some of the things that are coming down the road. When it comes, finally, the counter sheets, which obviously the Ebony people have been waiting for. And something new, interesting, when it comes to the Frack and the possibility of having kind of historic Frack, which I'm not exactly sure what that means. I think Gary was pointing out that basically it's meant to be make Fracks usable in a campaign context. So we'll see how that works out. Hopefully it works out, because I think that'd be kind of cool, at least to have that ability to add them to a campaign, because as it is, when it comes to Starfleet Warlord, the Fracks are considered kind of a campaign race already. There's nothing special. You can use the Fracks ships as part of, you know, your whole fleet and so forth, with no penalty, nothing weird. So, you know, you can do it in kind of Noel and Starfleet Warlord. But anyway, with that, I am Paul France, and I bid you a good night.